The sixth story, Father and Son. Because the people of Israel had demanded of Samuel a king, he had brought them Saul, the son of Kish, according to the Lord's command. One day Saul was plowing in his field when word was brought him that the Ammonites, their neighbors over east of Jordan, were about to make war upon them. They had boasted that they would make slaves of the children of Israel and would put out their eyes. So the people of Israel sent a messenger to Gibeah, where Saul lived, and told him of the dreadful threat. Saul took the two oxen which he had been driving, killed them, and cut them into pieces. He then sent the pieces throughout the length and breadth of the land. Along with them he sent the following stirring message: "Whosoever among ye comes not out to fight against the Ammonites, this will I do also to his oxen." So all the men of the kingdom rallied around Saul, the tall, splendid young man. He himself led them into battle, and their foes were driven from the land. The soldiers rejoiced greatly over the victory, and once more they sang and shouted, "God save the king!" Now the Ammonites were not a powerful people like the Philistines. They were only a tribe. So the war between them and the Israelites was only a tribal war. To deliver the children of Israel from the Philistines was the great task which confronted Saul. And it was not the king himself, but his son Jonathan, to whom the credit of capturing the Philistine stronghold in Gibeah was due. Saul's career was like that of many another man. It was different in the end from what it gave promise in youth of being. Saul was a great military leader. He was a patriot, but he lacked the personal qualities which would go to make up the character of a really great man. When he had been king for 2 years, the Philistines made war upon the people of Israel. The army of Saul, under command of Jonathan, attacked the camp of the Philistines, which is at Gibeah, and after they had done this, all the Philistines arose and fell upon them. Saul's army was not prepared for this, and instead of rallying around their leader, the soldiers turned and fled. Saul and Jonathan were left with just a few hundred men, and it seemed for a while that the Philistines would put an end to the people of Israel forever. As they did not resist, the Philistines divided their army into three parts and plundered the land far and wide. The soldiers of Israel ran and hid in caves and pits and old tombs and in any place they could find. Saul himself was at Gilgal, where Samuel had promised to meet and advise him what to do next. But 7 days went by, and Samuel came not. And Saul, although he had no right to do such a thing, offered a sacrifice to the Lord. Only the priest could make a burnt offering. The king had no right to do so. So no sooner was this done than Samuel appeared. He was angry, and he warned the king that unless he obeyed the Lord, he would choose a new king in his place. Now, while the Philistine army was divided into three parts and were thus more open to attack, Jonathan, by his boldness and courage, saved his father's kingdom for him. There was a pass across the mountains over which the people used to go to get from the River Jordan on the east to the Mediterranean Sea on the west. The valley of Michmash was on the side of the mountain which lay toward the Jordan, and the valley of Ajalon led down to the seacoast on the other side. On the south side of the pass was a place called Zeba, and here Saul's 600 frightened, trembling men were encamped. On the north side, in the valley of Michmash, the Philistines had their army. There was a sharp rock on the north side called Bozes, which means the shining. On the south side was another sharp rock called Senna, which means the thorny, and between these two rocks lay the road. From the high rock on the south side, Jonathan looked across the valley and saw that by a little boldness and cleverness, a single man could capture the place. So he decided that he would make a bold, single-handed attack. He did so, and it is one of the most dramatic acts in all Israel's history. Now, all the time the Israelites had been the slaves of the Philistines, the latter would not allow any smiths in the land. They feared lest they should make swords and spears for the people of Israel, and that they would then rise up and fight them. Among all the soldiers of Israel, none had a sword or a spear except Saul and Jonathan, his son. In those days, the men who fought had shields made of wood or brass or iron, and the captains and chiefs had servants who went wherever they went and carried their shields. These men were called armor bearers. When Jonathan decided that he would make this attack, he called his armor bearer to him and said, "Go with me to the camp of the Philistines, for who knows what the Lord may do for us this day?" The young man got Jonathan's spear and his shield and his bow and arrows and went with them. Jonathan said to him, "We will stand where the Philistines can see us. If they call to us and say, 'Wait,' then we shall know that the Lord will not help us. But if they say to us, 'Come up and fight us,' we shall know that we shall win." So they set out for the rock, and when the Philistines saw Jonathan and his armor bearer, they said, "Look, the Israelites are coming out of their holes at last." Then they shouted to Jonathan, saying, "Come up to us." Jonathan and his armor bearer climbed up the rocks, and when they got to the top, the Philistines began fighting. Jonathan began shooting down upon them and killed 20 of them. But they pressed him very hard, and perhaps things would have gone badly for Jonathan, for he was fighting alone against a large number, had not the Lord sent an earthquake, which at that very moment caused the earth to tremble and heave and roll. The Philistines were frightened. They turned and fled into their camps. Now Saul did not know that Jonathan had gone out with only his armor bearer, but he heard the tumult and looked from his tent. He saw the fighting and called his men together to see who was missing. He found that it was his son and knew that he was out there fighting with no one to help him. So he said, "Let us go down after the Philistines by night and plunder among them till daybreak, and let us not leave a man of them." The soldiers answered, "We will do as the king thinks best." But the priest spoke and said, "Let us first draw near to God and ask him." But the priest could obtain no answer to Saul's question as to whether the Lord would that day deliver the Philistines into his hands. And because they could not get the answer, Saul thought that some one of them had been guilty of some act of which he had no knowledge. So, without waiting longer for the answer, Saul rallied his men and was soon in hot pursuit. The men came creeping out of their caves and pits where they had hidden themselves and joined in the fight. In their terror on account of the earthquake and in their confusion, the Philistines began fighting each other. Saul's army fell upon them and chased them across the hill country of Ephraim, over the pass across the mountains. The Philistines went in mad flight, and the army of Israel took courage when they found their hated enemies flying before them. But before they started out to make the attack, Saul, like Jephthah, made a rash vow. It was an act of great folly. He laid an oath upon the people that if any man tasted food before evening, he should be put to death. Jonathan, of course, was not there when Saul made this vow. He was out on the great high rock fighting the Philistines. After the soldiers came up to support him and the enemy fled, Jonathan, as he returned to camp, came upon a nest which some wild bees had made and from which the honey was dripping. Not knowing anything of the vow, he dipped his staff in the honey and ate of it. A soldier who was standing near saw Jonathan eating the honey and said, "Thy father hath straitly charged the people with an oath, saying, 'Cursed be the man that eateth food this day.'" Jonathan looked about and saw how faint and weary and hungry the men were, and he said, "My father hath done a foolish thing. See how mine eyes have lightened because I have tasted of this honey. If the people had eaten freely of the spoil today, there would have been much greater slaughter among the Philistines." When the day was over, the soldiers were so hungry that they took the sheep and the oxen and the calves and slew them on the ground. Then they ate them without waiting for the blood to run off, and this was looked upon as a great wrong. It was thought wicked for the people to eat meat unless it had been properly killed and all the blood allowed to run off. The blood was used as an offering to the Lord. You know that the Jews still keep this custom. Their meat is always specially killed and prepared. Saul was anxious to follow up the victory of the day by making further war upon their enemies. So once more the priests called upon the Lord for counsel, but the divine voice gave no response. And again the king thought it must be because someone had broken the oath. Just then a soldier came running in and told Saul of his son's supposed disobedience. The king was greatly troubled. He loved his son, yet he felt he must keep his word. He was afraid to let the people see that he had changed his mind lest they think him weak and cowardly. He could not see that it is often courageous to change one's mind, but here was another evidence that Saul lacked the character of a great man. Every man knows that if he makes a decision rashly and then discovers that it is a foolish thing, it is far more honorable to break than to keep it. An honest man will be honest with himself as well as with other people. But the king was torn between the agony of putting his son to death and of being false himself to the oath he had that day imposed upon all the people. But Jonathan was a brave and noble fellow. He was both honest and fearless. When he saw the hard position in which he had placed his father, he went to him and said, "Here I am. I am ready to die." And Saul answered, "You shall surely die." But for once the king found that the people were more powerful than he. They rose up against Saul and cried, "And shall Jonathan die, who hath this day wrought our deliverance from the Philistines? Far from it. As the Lord liveth, not a hair of his head shall be touched, for he hath wrought with God this day. He shall not die." So Jonathan's life was spared. But after that night, Saul was never the same. The strain and distress seemed to have affected his mind. Part of the time he was like himself, but there would be days and days where he would sit alone all day long, thinking dreadful thoughts and speaking to no one. After this victory, Saul and Jonathan went back to their own country. Being a king in those days was a different thing from what it is now, or what it was in the days of David and Solomon. Saul's court was his camp. The stern and hardy warriors who surrounded him, eager to help defend the liberties of Israel, were not like the courtiers and nobles who thronged the courts of the later kings. Instead of a scepter, Saul held a spear. All during his reign there was trouble, and most of the time the fighting was severe. But after the defeat of the Philistines by Jonathan, they never again made a united effort to conquer Israel. Little bands of hostile Philistines sometimes fell upon the outlying villages and towns, killed the inhabitants, and carried off the spoil. Then they would escape before the army of Israel could get together and attack them. But for the most part, they stayed in their own country, and after the fight in the Valley of Michmash, Saul and Jonathan too stayed at home. They busied themselves with building up and strengthening their army. Saul made his cousin Abner captain of his army, and under his leadership they gained great victories. They defeated their enemies on all sides and kept them out of the land of Israel.